welcome to another segment of Open House here at Community Media. This is the show where we invite awesome people from the community who are doing great things to make our community a safe, thriving, and vibrant place to live. And I am Raymond Galker, and I have with me Elida Murray, who is the Executive Director for the Adams County
Children's Advocacy Center.
Children's Advocacy Center.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for helping me get through that.
No problem. Thank you.
The Children's Advocacy Center. Community Media has been on an adventure these last couple years. We had a grant from the Community Foundation, the Adams County Community Foundation, where Community Media has worked with Megan Cherie, WSCAP,
mm-hmm.
wonderful, can't say enough,
mm-hmm.
Organization.
Very important to our community.
And she's an amazing professional leader, as you are yourself. And we work with Heidi, and we work with Manish Unitas. And we interviewed, it was like, okay, we're looking at the nonprofits. What makes a good nonprofit? And it all came back to what is the role of a nonprofit and the community. And has now gotten to, when you look at the community, you look at the youth.
Right.
You know, it's great that the adults are able to try to make life the way they want it. But our youth, they need help. Even those who are healthy needs to have a connection to the community through adults who are helping them find their potential.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think about that?
So, you know, like when you asked me if I would host a series of open houses, that was, you know, that was really kind of forefront in my mind, because we do work with children, and we work with children and their caregivers, their family members, who have been going through some really horrendous things sometimes, you know, in terms of child abuse and neglect. But the offset to that is, the more that we as a community can develop a place and a time and a space that helps children to have positive experiences, to have positive relationships, to have things that are going really well for them in their life, things that they can feel proud of and that empower them and then teach them and they develop skills, all of those things, the more that children, even if they're impacted by trauma, the trauma of abuse, they have some skills to lean on in order to heal. And so all of that kind of encompasses is my idea of what resilience building looks like. It's about networks and people caring about each other and people taking care of the world around them. And all of those things help our kids develop resilience. So when you asked me if I would do a series about that, that was the first thing that I thought about. Like, can't we showcase some of the organizations in our community that help kids build resilience? And I only had four, so I had to pick four, because I know there's hundreds of different ways that happens, but we picked four to go with.
So you're ready to pick more?
We could do variations on that theme forever, and I think that's useful, because I do think that, because often we're smaller organizations, you know, the Children's Advocacy Center has been here since 2006. We've supported more than 2,700 children over the course of our years. We're heading into our 18th year. Actually, September 19th of 2006 was the day that we supported our first child victim of abuse, a teenage girl. And, you know, there's been a lot of kids that come through our center since then. But we're also really invested in doing that prevention education piece, letting kids know about body safety, letting them know about empowerment. And so these other organizations that we showcased and other organizations across the county are developing that foundational support for kids as well. And so we view them as collaborative partners in that effort of keeping kids safe and family strong. We have, if you want to call it a little niche in that, we're working directly with child abuse victims. and their families, and we're also working to prevent future abuse. But our community partners are in a different way doing not necessarily similar work, but supporting work or corresponding work.
And they're all connecting with the youth.
Right.
They're all trying to provide for the young individuals a safe relationship where they could find their potential and be given some skills.
Yeah. Because in a perfect world, you know, a child's family will be able to do that for them. But we don't live in that perfect world. And we have a lot of children in our community that don't have a safe home environment. And so, and I don't want to go too far down this tangent, but I can tell you as a child myself who had a mom with some pretty significant mental health issues, it was my community that provided some of those extra resilience building things. You know, I had neighbors who drove me to music lessons, and I had other community members that watched out for us at school, or in Girl Scouts and 4-H and all of those things. And that made a difference. It absolutely makes a difference.
So you were involved in Scouts?
I was a Girl Scout for a while. I spent more time in 4-H. 4-H was near and dear to my heart because I'm a country girl at heart. My family lived on a ranch, so that was a pretty natural thing for us. But also, it's kind of an underlying thing, and they talked about it when we talked about 4-H's. There's an underlying development. It's youth development in terms of leadership and having a project and seeing something through, even when it gets hard. And all those are life skills that, again, I could say this a million times, it's resilience building. Like, when you run into situations in a project that you didn't anticipate, that's a very adult thing, but if you can kind of having figured out how to do that as a kid, you're going to take that skill and apply it in your life.
Music
is great.
Was
for
very important to you?
I was an okay violin player. But I think the not a great violin player, but I think the thing that was really valuable was being in the orchestra and being in a group and working together as a group. For me, that was a really impactful experience.
Mm-hmm. A sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Shared goals.
Had to practice. Had to pay attention to what the orchestra leader, the band teacher was teaching us, or the orchestra leader was teaching us. Had to pay attention to what the people around me were playing and keep pace. You know, all those things are really great things to learn how to do.
Discipline.
Yeah.
Sacrifice?
Discipline's a problem for me.
Was that right?
But it doesn't help. It doesn't ever hurt to learn more discipline.
That's right. That's because you're so creative.
Well, I like to do a lot of different things.
Okay.
And so, but I did learn how to see things through. Okay. So that I think that was useful in all of those activities.
And there's the factor. The factor is having people donate their time, or even if they're paid, to be there to build a relationship with that young individual. As you said, greet them where they're at, and then give them a chance to see some possibilities.
And celebrate who they are, you know, for who they are already, not who you think they should be. You know, as people who are older in this community, we have a lot of older active seniors that I would say that's a great call to action. And it may not be that you choose to work directly with youth. Maybe that's not your thing. But there are millions of different ways in this community to get involved and get engaged. And any one of those ultimately will support the future.
And the place to find it is to look at your heart. Yep. What is close
what
to
interests
your
you?
Heart?
Mm-hmm.
What is close to your heart? So, and that's how you got involved with serving our youth?
Yeah, I've always really been drawn to children's and family services. And I've done some work in the for-profit world, frankly, to help my kids through college and make the kind of money it makes to put 4 kids through college. You know, enough said about that. But I really, what a win it is to go to work every day. And yes, I get a paycheck and I have bills to pay. But at the same time, I feel like I'm doing something for the future. So to me, that's the win-win. That's why I kind of I've always gravitated towards nonprofit work.
Okay. And the youth. and the youth.
Yeah, children and families, for sure.
Children and families. Which is at the heart, the cornerstone of a community.
Especially a community like Adams County. I had a couple of weeks ago, I had friends visiting from out of state, and they had really never spent any time in Adams County. And, you know, of course, we did some of the tourist things that you do. You would come to Gettysburg and do the battlefield and the town and talk about those things. But more than that, they were just blown away by two things kind of equally. First of all, that this is such a beautiful place to live.
Oh.
It's just beautiful here. And then second piece is that people were just so kind and friendly and caring and inviting in a way in terms of being personable and, you know, asking questions and just connecting that they weren't used to seeing. And I think those are both things that we do in Adams County. We do them really well.
We will make eye contact.
Absolutely. We'll say, how's your day?
Yeah.
Because we want to know, not mm-hmm. because we're just trying to, like, pass the time at the checkout counter or whatever. Absolutely.
There's a true warmth that comes from engaging with people here.
And I think people are generally happy here.
Yeah.
And when you're happy, you have that, you have more space in your life to be welcoming and caring towards others. And so I think, and we're very lucky for the most part to live where we live and to be able to do what we do. And we, you know, people by and large have made a choice to be here. And I think that when you have that space that you're good with, then you have more space to give to others.
So we asked you to be a guest host.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is community media is about celebrating who we are and what we do as a community.
Mm-hmm.
And by having someone of your connections, of your skills, to come in and be the host where you invite people within your circle, which was serving the youth, we're able to reach out and celebrate more individuals that are doing great things.
Doing really great things.
And also, we get a different perspective
mm-hmm.
because you're living an experience different than ours here. So you decided to go back to your background,
mm-hmm.
the 4-H.
Mm-hmm.
So you were a member of the 4-H.
I was.
You were a ranch person.
In the Phoenix metropolitan area, I was in 4-H for years and years and years. So Maricopa County, Arizona, for all of you who happen to be, you know, West Coast transplants.
Okay. And cattle?
Nope. We had cows. We had, like, we had steers, but my parents had a horse ranch.
Okay.
And my my parents raised and trained quarter horses and polo ponies. So we had a lot of horses. But I liked littler things too, so I had goats and rabbits and chickens, and my sister had pigs. I'm not a pig person. She loves pigs. So we did all of those kinds of things. Yeah.
No sheep?
No.
No sheep, because I have sheep.
Well, bless your heart.
Yeah. Love sheep.
Okay. I won't say anything bad about sheep.
Don't say anything bad about sheep. Okay. So what did you learn from the 4-H group that we had on?
Well, I think I learned about all of the groups is just these young people are so amazing. And if you get to sit and listen to them and they talk about the things that are interesting to them, that's really inspiring to me. But I think with 4-H is I could see their level of commitment to their projects, whether it be animals or there's other types of projects from 4-H. You can do sewing and cook. I mean, there's just tons of things. But that also their commitment to the concepts of 4-H, which even, you know, 50 years later, I can still say my hands to higher thinking, you know, all of that. I can still do that motto like they could do. But also that commitment to that concept. And I think these are going to be the kind of people, should they choose to continue that path, that are going to be our leaders
there
in the
leaders.
Future. I could see that happening. And I'm still here to see that happening. Mm-hmm. That's my goal.
So they're very positive and got a lot of life skills. We have a little clip from the 4-H. And I think we're going to see Alexis Landford, mm-hmm. who's the 4-H educator, Casey Zirk, and Michaela Keller.
Great.
Okay, so.
Let's watch. So what do you think 4-H has kind of set you up for in terms of your future? What has it taught you that you think you're going to be able to use going forward?
Well, my future plans is to attend Penn State and get a degree in agricultural business management. So 4-H has definitely helped shape me towards that direction by giving me influences through all different things about agriculture. And then my own spin in it would be the business, because I really enjoy learning those kind of things. So without 4-H, I don't think I would have ever seen that as a career path, but I'm definitely thankful for it.
Hmm. I would say prepared me into being able to communicate well with others. I've done the public speaking events that we have. I also feel like I've learned a lot of leadership skills through being an officer in clubs, and just being able to take on leadership roles. I've definitely matured as an individual and gained a lot of really important skills that'll help me in the future.
I think that's interesting in terms of, I'm kind of keying in on like what I've learned that I can like stage into my next step, right? Going to school or being a camp counselor, just learning problem solving on the ground, right? Because as a counselor, that's kind of the whole job, isn't it? Like, okay, I have to help steer and make sure everybody's safe and make sure everything's good. Herding cats, yeah, very much. So what I think when you look at Casey and Michaela and what they're talking about is like, you know, we're agriculture is the thing in Adams County. I mean, we have many, many things that are beautiful here, but agriculture is a predominant, and we're looking at how do we preserve our agricultural future. I mean, some of the kind of things that are happening today is what do we do about solar, and what do we do about this? What do we do? How do we preserve some of this historic farmland? And you're looking at how that's going to get preserved. It's going to be people who understand the business of agriculture and understand the hard work of agriculture that is going to move that piece forward for our community.
And the 4-H and other programs provide a space for people to interact, as we stated before, with certain stated and unstated roles, you know, of being positive to each other, mm-hmm. working towards mm-hmm. the same type of goal,
yep.
or just being supportive. Your project might be different to mine, so you're going to give me support
mm-hmm.
as I work towards mm-hmm. trying to make it the best I can.
You know, there was somebody way back in my early time that his motto was, you do the right things for the right reasons, and the right things will automatically happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of is a thread throughout all of this. But I also want to, on that clip, want to give some props to the 4-H coordinator, the 4-H educator, Alexis Lansford, because she came up through 4-H herself and through agriculture. But you'll notice that she was very good at stepping back and letting those young ladies handle the conversation, because she trusted them enough and she knew of their capabilities enough that she knew that they would shine. And I think that skill is really important for our youth and youth development, just having those supporting adults.
And allowing you to have a voice.
Mm-hmm. Empowerment is very important.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to have a voice like automatically when you like get out of high school or finish college or whatever. It needs to be worked on all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have opportunities for that all the way through.
Mm-hmm. And be able to respect each other so that people listen to you mm-hmm. when you apply your voice.
And even if you disagree, because we do live in an increasingly divisive world, so.
Everyone looks at things differently, and there's going to be disagreements, even in your own household, you know. So how do you handle those? And these organizations give that an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Give that an opportunity.
Yep.
So, guest hosts, was this your first group that you had on?
I think it was. I'm trying to look back.
How did you feel?
So I'm not naturally someone who does this like really comfortably. So I think I just kind of knew that if I could get out of their way, they would do a great job. And that was my whole goal. Just stay out of their way. You know, just only steer when you have to steer. But don't work too hard to like run the show. Just let the show happen.
Let the show, let them express rather than you putting the words in their mouth.
Right, right.
And you did a great job.
No, thank
all
you.
These
but they did a great job.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, next we have the collaboration for youth.
Correct.
What is the collaboration for youth?
So Collaborating for Youth is like a grassroots organization. And I apologize to leadership at Collaborating for Youth that I do not have your mission down 100%, but I'm going to paraphrase it, which is Collaborating for Youth is about promoting the positive experiences and youth development in our community. So that's a lot of moving parts and can be done in a lot of different ways, but there are youth leadership groups in the high schools, there's some work being done in middle schools. They do a lot of data assessment in terms of something called the PAYS data, which is a survey that's sent out to schools all across Pennsylvania. And it's really insightful because they're asking very very insightful questions of sixth graders through 12th graders. Things like, have you felt anxious or depressed in the last 30 days? Things that really get to the heart of where our kids are at, where our young people are at emotionally, as well as educationally.
So this sounds like SCAP. They're very intentional and strategic, and they listened to their clients in order to develop the program.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying the collaboration for youth actually try to find the pulse.
And it's youth-led. So youth determine what Collaborating for Youth is going to do in terms of things. So if you guys have, anyone out in the community has done anything about medicine take back, Collaborating for Youth and youth leadership runs those things with the assistance of us as adults, like I volunteered for some of those, and with the assistance, of course, of police departments because of some of the, you know, details about involving controlled substances, collecting used medication and that sort of thing. But it's a youth-led initiative. And the more that youth, A, lead those initiatives, the more we as adults realize how capable and amazing they are, but also how they learn how to do those kinds of things. So it's a win-win.
What are the requirements to become part of this organization?
It's predominantly high schools. There is some middle school, but if you're a high school student and you can just reach out to your, I would say even check in with your guidance counselor as you start school this year and say, hey, I heard about Collaborating for Youth and I want to be involved in the youth leadership group here in this school, and they can help promote that connection. But I, my basic understanding is that Collaborating for Youth will be also going out and like talking in assemblies or putting flyers up and all that sort of thing in all the schools.
Another great opportunity for individuals to work together.
Yep.
To become leaders.
Yep.
To become good followers.
And team. It's a team effort, you know, and the thing about a team is you're not all necessarily good at any one thing, but together you're good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to figure out like what your skill sets are, how they fit in, how other people's skill sets can make you better for what you do, and that's the genesis of teamwork.
And learning that it is okay for someone to do well, it's okay for someone to succeed, and it's okay to root for another person to find their potential as you're trying to find your potential.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
is a good concept. I remember growing up hitting around middle school where it was usually the person who was clever with their words and putting you down. And that was the way people communicated. And I'm seeing that through these type of organizations that people are given an alternative to something like that.
Right.
Why did you choose the collaboration?
Since I started here back in 2018 with the Children's Advocacy Center, one of the first other organizations, because I really believe in collaboration and working with other organizations, we can't operate in silos and do a good job. We need to be able to connect with others, share resources, share knowledge. And so I started attending Collaborating for Youth meetings, and I try to stay as actively engaged in that community as I can. But it's just really about, these are kids who are just your normal, average, everyday kids, but they are getting some really amazing stuff done. And when you see that, not only is it empowering for me, but it's also like it pushes me a little bit to do more, because hey, if kids can, you know, have school and have a full-time job and show up for these events and do all these things, then I think I can do a little more too. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we're gonna see a segment of your interview. I think it's Lyric.
Yep.
Lyric Gallagher, is the youth coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
And Maya Niederer?
Niederer. Yes.
And they're the co-chairs.
This year.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Ashley, you mentioned that it being involved in Youth Coalition has really taught you how to kind of promote things that are important to you and to be able to speak about those things. Are there any other kind of skills or gifts that you've picked up from being involved in Youth Coalition?
I know that peer pressure is a big topic, and back in when I was a freshman, so 2021, 22-ish, we had these Zooms that were online because we were in peak of COVID, mm-hmm. and so they were online, and we got to learn about the people of color and their struggles and what we and they go through, and, you know,
Diversity piece, mm-hmm. like understanding someone else's life experience.
Exactly, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Something that I really appreciate about the Youth Coalition is people don't understand, I guess, or it's not really spoken about, but you talk about networking all the time. You talk about networking to get jobs, to get into colleges, different things like that, yep. just to get opportunities, but nobody ever teaches you how to network. I think that the Youth Coalition has taught me really well how to go out and have conversations with people and be such a people person in a way that impresses employers, impresses college people, impresses community members, and could have the potential to get me different opportunities later on in life. I applied for a scholarship recently, and I was better able and better prepared for the interview that I did for that scholarship because of what I do here with CFY.
Well, when you hear those two young ladies speak, you're like, you know, those of us of a certain age, you know, we could adopt an attitude like, you know, the world's going to hell in a handbasket or however we want to do. But when you look at those two, you're like, we're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. I taught school for 39 years. And still today, when I talk to someone, it's, wow, you know, how could you do that? The kids these days. And, and, you know, kids these days are the same as the kids when we grew up and prior to us. Now, they probably for sure know more.
For sure know more.
Have been exposed to more.
For sure.
And probably been challenged much greatly, mm-hmm. greater than we. But they want to know themselves. They want to know their potential. They want to be accepted. They want to have a small posse.
Mm-hmm.
People that they can
trust.
And these organizations provide that. Provides opportunities that are close to their hearts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're good people.
And again, it goes to our future. You know, we're developing, you know, they're developing some skills that they're going to use forever. But also, I think it goes to the quality of what our future can look like. Because, you know, sooner or later, you know, I'm 61 years old. We're going to have to pass a baton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who am I passing the baton to?
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. I think it's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. So now we go to Head Start. Why did you invite Head Start on your show?
Yeah, so Head Start. So personally, my first foray into secondary education was early childhood development, because it fascinates me. And so I've always kind of had that, like, what happens early in your life that impacts you forever? Good or bad, but let's go with the good, right? And so Head Start is just an amazing program that's been around for a very long time. It's evidence-based, highly researched, and it is about giving very young children the very best start in life that they can have, educationally, culturally, socially, all of those pieces. But shockingly, when I'm on several different groups, and Head Start is on those groups too, the enrollment is down. Why is enrollment down in a free program that is so amazing, so well accepted, been around so long? What's going on with that? And I think it's about maybe we've lost track for a little bit about that value of early childhood education and the way that it can set a child up for lifelong learning and lifelong positive experiences in the community. So I thought this was an excellent opportunity to be able to share some information about that.
So what happens to become part of Head Start?
All you have to do is call, and there's a slight enrollment process, but it's really not complicated.
So it's for anyone?
It's for anyone.
Not just someone who has been suggested or...
No. It's I think that once you reach out to Head Start, you'll see that there's so many more benefits for your child than you could do at home yourself, any of those things. So I think, especially when kids are going into kindergarten now, that ready-to-learn phase is really, really critical, and this is another way to get that piece working for you.
What age?
Oh, that's something that I think it's like 3 and up, but don't quote me because I'm not the expert there.
So a person could get in it at a young age, possibly 3, and stay there till 5, 6?
Till school. So definitely check it out. Like, if I'm giving you wrong information, all you have to do is either go out and Google Head Start and get that information, or just pick up the phone and call and ask the question.
So is this something that happens daily, twice a week, or?
I think it's varied, but I think it also depends on, you know, what works for you and your family as well.
Is this an occurrence where the parent and the child are there at the same time?
There are parent activities, but it's not parent all the time. So there are working parents and all kinds of things.
Is this a program where, let's say, every Thursday from a certain time to a certain time?
Right, there is. It's daytime.
It's routine.
You know, we're dealing with little kids,
yes.
So it needs to be during the day. It needs to be fairly early in the day. It's not an evening thing, except for maybe some special events and that sort of thing.
So they're exposed to learning activities
with their peers, which is really critical. You know, learn early how to get along with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was lucky that I had 3 children very close together, so they had their own little peer group, but some children don't have peers, and you know, they spend their whole day with adults. And then what if they go to kindergarten and they have no experience working with others their own age? That's a very hard transition for kids, and that could really set them back educationally if they cannot comfortably make that transition. So that social emotional growth is a really big piece mm-hmm. of what can happen.
Confidence is a word that's important at all age groups, even adults, mm-hmm. in order to take that step to try something new.
Right.
Or something you may be uncomfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So at a young age, that's developed.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Absolutely.
We have Jennifer Showers, who is the executive director. We have Amy Giese.
That sounds right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Who's the teacher, and Kate Patrick Patricka?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the parent?
Who's a parent.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think especially, not that Jennifer doesn't have really important things to say, but I think listening to what parent has to say, I think would be really insightful. If I might, Kate, let me ask you, what has it been like for your child and your family in Head Start?
It's been absolutely fantastic. I couldn't ask for a better program for my kids. They've learned so much. At the beginning of last year, when my first son started going, he couldn't talk. He said, like, he would go, eh, for things, and he couldn't tell me what he wanted. Well, in the middle of last year is when he really started talking, because he needed to be around other kids, and he was also getting the help he needs from teachers also.
Right.
They gave me the opening for LIU to come in and help him with speech, and which I wouldn't have known what to do at home for him to help him. So without Head Start, I don't think he'd be ready for kindergarten next year. With Head Start, I fully believe he is absolutely ready to go, and he's used to that routine of in the morning going to school, I pick him up, we go home and do whatever, but he knows where he's got to go, he knows the rules there, and he
knows what to expect.
Yes, exactly.
So kindergarten is not going to be a big scary thing, right? Because
right.
he knows, okay, this is what school is like, and school is great, so why won't I have a great time?
Yes, and he's getting that interaction with the other kids right. that we can't really get at home, because we don't have many kids his age to play with at home.
Right.
So, again, without Head Start, he wouldn't have got that interaction that he needed to go into kindergarten.
And not to put words in your mouth, but I imagine what you said is just the growth and the change in a few short months was mm-hmm. probably like, oh my gosh,
yes.
overwhelming amount of change.
And the change from last year to this year is outstanding. I couldn't have asked for so much change in such a short little time with the teachers working with him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
hard on to be able to help and help me learn how to help him too, because I also didn't know how to help him either.
Mm-hmm. I think Kate said it best.
You do an excellent job as a host.
I just like to talk to people.
There you go. But Head Start, a great program, not only for the child, but for the parent. And one word just keeps coming back to me with all the groups that you've showed is advocate. You know, there's nothing like having an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And Head Start, this parent had a group that was advocating for them. She was able to learn what was out there and available that she might not have mm-hmm. even known.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but as a parent, she was also wise enough to recognize that as parents, we don't know everything about everything, right? Nobody taught us how to be parents until they deliver this child to you, and you're like, okay, now I get to take this thing home, and you're going to let me take this child home? Like, how do you know I'm ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
So that piece, I think, is where parents and caregivers can really kind of set what they might, whatever little concerns or reservations they may have, and just seek some information and decide if that's going to be a good thing for their kid.
Mm-hmm. So, all these organizations that we're talking about, you can go to their website and contact them and learn more. Great organizations. And I think we have
one more.
We have one more. I skipped one. And we can't skip this one. So why did you invite Chad Allen Carr with the Gettysburg Community Theater as part of your guest?
Well, I think that we're a fairly traditional community. 4-H is fairly traditional here. Sports organizations are fairly traditional. School activities are fairly traditional, but not every kid is all about that, right? There are kids that have different interests, and maybe they're theatrical or they're musical or those sorts of things, or maybe they're not necessarily don't know that they're theatrical or musical, but they're incredibly shy, and that fear of working with others and opening your mouth in the public and all of those things and singing, oh my gosh, standing on a stage and singing terrifies me. But maybe that outlet is incredibly important to a group of kids that maybe other things aren't the best fit for them personally. And I think having that opportunity, but they're also for a community to be able to come in and view those those presentations, whether it be a musical show or a play or whatever, is another way that empowers kids about their value. We children, I think, by nature of the way the world works, don't always know they have value. And I think we've got to find ways as a community to let them know that they do.
Value and a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
We're all in this together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're all different. We all have that missing piece that makes the puzzle whole.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a piece here with Chad yourself and Chad Allen Carr, the executive director of the Gettysburg Community Theater. And Kelly Scott is a mom and a volunteer. And Ella Scott is the performer.
Correct.
So why don't we look at this interview?
So how do you think, Kelly, or Ella, whoever would like to answer, how do you think Gettysburg Community Theater has helped you in happiness and being in a good place in your life?
Do you wanna?
Okay. I would say making new friends and getting out of the house.
Yeah. Doing something you love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it build up your confidence? I know, because I've known you for many years, on how far you've come, and not just your singing, your voice, your speaking voice. It's just like night and day. It's completely, you have really, really improved over the years. It's pretty incredible. And I hope that theater has helped that. I think I remember talking with your sister too about that. Apparently even it helped you improved at school with grades and academics and everything. And that hopefully maybe that was part of the theater, kind of helped with that and building up your confidence.
So we'll end the show with Ella, and Chad Allen Carr has agreed to be one of our guest hosts coming
up. Very
cool. You know?
Very cool.
So I think this will be exciting. So we'll be able to showcase a lot of the participants, hopefully a lot of the participants for the Gettysburg Community Theater. So what was your take from your interview?
I think in total, in all of my interviews, it's always, well, just speaking very personally, we at the center, working with traumatized, abused kids day in and day out, we hear a lot of really hard stories, really hard stuff is happening to kids. And so personally for me, to be able to spend time with kids who are like in a different spot and enjoying life in a different way is very personally kind of rewarding. But I think more than anything, it just shows how amazing kids are, how amazing these young people that are our next generations are, and why would we not want to help with that? Why would we not want to become a part of that future with them? However that is, our interests lie, whatever that looks like, why would we not want to be involved in some way? To me, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's, I think it's natural that we are and supposed to be involved with our youth and have relationships, positive relationships with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a family, a community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in order to have a thriving community, everyone needs an opportunity to find what's close to their heart and to find their potential. But along with that, there's a responsibility, or I would say a big thrill, helping others find their heart.
You get
potential.
So much more out of it than you give. And, you know, we talked about active seniors earlier. It's like we are a community with a high percentage of active seniors and seniors in general. And, you know, do you want to just spend the rest of your life in your recliner? I mean, not me. I'm not looking forward to something like along those lines. But I think there's just so much opportunity to bring quality to those last 20 years of your life, let's say. I don't want to put a date on anybody, an expiration date on anybody, but that, why would you want to waste that time? We had our careers and we raised our kids and we got our, you know, our basic needs met finally, right? It took a long time to get to the place we're at today. I'm 61. And why would we not, that doesn't mean we quit now.
No.
We have so much that we could be doing. Mm-hmm. Why would we not want to do that?
Elida, did you find that when you were growing your skills, your talents, finding out who you were, that you had to set goals?
Not always. I mean, I think a lot of it was, especially as a young person, a young mom, and then a young single mom, is like, sometimes it's about get through the day.
Survival.
Sometimes it's about, did I, you know, cover the bills, and did the kids have what they need for school, and are we kind of... But I think that in the long term, it's like, along the way, I recognize that, you know, so many people helped me. So many people helped my kids. So many people showed me a different way to live as I was growing, maturing. Because my early childhood was, my childhood was not ideal. But I could see how others were doing it. And I'm like, okay, I can see how that works. And then there were people who literally made a concerted effort to be mentors and helpers and kind of show me a path. And I think that... you can do that in a way that's not condescending or reproachful of someone where they're at now, but you can just be like, just represent, you know, just show up. And I think that it's so easy to do.
And make a difference in someone else's life.
And make a difference in your own, mm-hmm. You know? Why would you want to just kind of sit around and take care of, be selfish, you know?
I found that setting goals help me reach my potential. And sometimes I found that striving for the goals was a lot more rewarding than actually reaching the goals. And I found out that the beauty of anticipation, you know, anticipating for something, anticipating for the last day of school, the anticipating for going swimming and things like that. And, you know, as we age, we could still have anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
We could still have goals, but we could have them for our youth.
Or for more outward, like more, less about your own personal self or your own personal family, and more about, like, what do you want to leave behind?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of person do you want people to reflect on when you're gone? And, you know, and I think that when you're in your later part of life, I think people tend to think about that a lot. At least I find that my parents did that more. My older families did that more. I remember having really long conversations with my grandmother about that, mm-hmm. like what she felt was her legacy. And I think that's human and is to be celebrated, but don't waste it. But you know, you talk about goals, and I wish I could say, oh yes, I had these goals and I accomplished this and this, but mostly, you know, especially in my early life, it was like survive. But at the same time, I kind of think, and people who know me have heard me say this, so I apologize to anyone listening who's heard it a million times, is I had two kind of mantras that I still repeat very often today. And the first was, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. Because I think there's a way that we can take more than we give. And we should be giving more than we take. And then the second piece is, adversity does not define your character, it reveals it. So what is this going to say about you? Like when you reach something that's hard. And I think those are my two touchstones, but everyone's got them. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're true to your goals were a piece that you drove your life by, or for me it was my mantras. I think if you're true to that and you're true to yourself, you're going to do good things.
Good people doing good things make a great community, doesn't it?
Exactly.
So, thanks for coming in again.
Thank you for the time.
And thanks for being a guest host. Hopefully you'll continue to be one?
All you guys got to do is make a phone call and ask. We'll be there.
And if someone asked you about being a guest host, what would you say?
I can say that community media makes it is certainly very easy to do. You don't have to be an expert in all things TV, so I'm certainly not. I think that it allows you in an appropriate way, in an appropriate setting, to talk about things that are important to you. It allows you to connect to a wider audience than you may get to meet in your everyday life. And, you know, for us and for the work we do, it allowed us to say, hey, we all can do things to help kids. We all can be out there for our kids and our families. So that was a great opportunity for us, and we appreciated having the chance to do it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the importance of our youth, you've heard it many times, but, you know, they're our future. People have helped us. We need to help them. And... again, to know more about the Adams County
Children's Advocacy Center,
you can get online, contact Elida Murray if you would like to. Always looking for volunteers and donations, as all these organizations are, to make them work and provide opportunities for our youth. And thanks for spending time with us here at Community Media. And until we have a chance to bring another wonderful person, just like Elida Murray, into our studios, stay safe, be healthy, and remember that you are the best.
It beats like the wings of the birds.